Blog Talk Radio.
The HD View.
Happy Tuesday, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD, the HD View, Ask Dr. Goodman Show. She's back with us tonight. Yay, we've missed her. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host. Our call-in numbers tonight are 310-982-4227 or 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1. I'll cue you into the show. And please tell all your colleagues, friends, and family about Help for HD Radio. Click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. Thank you, 82,000 listeners. Amazing for tuning in. Dr. Goodman is back tonight. We're so happy to have her back. Tune in and listen about, we're going to be talking about FIRST HD, a clinical trial by HSG, Huntington Study Group, and Auspex Pharmaceutical Company. FIRST HD is a clinical trial testing SD809ER, which stands for extended release. It's a new extended release form of tetrabenazine, xenazine. And also read Dr. Goodman's article, Why FIRST HD? Because we need a better tetrabenazine, on her website, www.hddrugworks.org, and follow her there. Help HD International is very proud to be working closely with HSG and Auspex to promote and educate about FIRST HD and ARC HD, as well as many other clinical trials. We are proud to be launching the first clinical trial support platform to help support all clinical trials for Huntington's disease. And we'll be coming up with some very creative ways to help educate and inform our community about these clinical trials. So let's welcome back to the Ask Dr. Goodman Show. Hello, LaVon. Dr. Goodman, how are you tonight?
I'm good. Good to be back. Yay! Happy New Year to everyone.
Everyone's happy.
Well, Happy New Year to everyone, yeah.
Thank you. Great article and very well-timed, I might add. So let's talk about that. And why do we need an extended-release tetrabenazine?
Well, we need good drugs to treat chorea and, of course, other symptoms as well. But the tetrabenazine one is, it would be good to have a drug that is both effective and doesn't have as many side effects as our present drugs. Doctors are very limited in what we can use to help with chorea because each alternative, and either an antipsychotic drug or a tetrabenazine drug, xenazine here or nitamin in Canada, does not, each of these carry with them some significant side effects that prevent using them in or limit the dosage that can be used. It would be great if we had an effective drug that didn't have as many side effects. And so I think that is the hope for an extended release form. I think that's the main reason for doing this. Of course, patient convenience is important, but we have a good drug. I'm sure we would take it 3 or 4 times a day. And until we had one that we could only take one a day. But the most important thing is fewer side effects to get an effect. And I think that's the most important part.
Right. So can we kind of give our listeners a little information about tetrabenazine, when it came out, and what exactly are the side effects of tetrabenazine as it is now, not the extended release form, but the way it's formulated now, what's going on with that?
Well, tetrabenazine has been approved in many countries for decades. In Canada, it had been in use. In many different countries in Europe, had been in use for decades. It was not approved in the United States until about 7, 8 years ago. I forget exactly the year, but it will be coming off patent before long in a few years, which means it will go generic. So it's not so far from, so it's about that length of time that it has been approved for chorea in Huntington's. The side effects that are most worrisome are depression. Now, depression, it's very hard for many of the side effects, whether it's tetrabenazine or an antipsychotic, it's hard to tell some of the side effects from what happens with disease symptoms. Depression is very common in Huntington's. So is it due to a life change or the fact that someone was on tetrabenazine? It's very hard to sort those things out in a clinical trial or in day-to-day clinical practice. But depression is certainly one of the side effects of potential side effects of tetrabenazine. I think everybody agrees with that. And if depression occurs on tetrabenazine, it's important to recognize it early so the dosage can be decreased and, if necessary, you know, the drug stopped. I have found it not necessary to stop tetrabenazine. Decreasing the drug and treating depression is often enough to be able to continue the drug at some dosage level, but not always. So that's an important one. Fatigue is a very, very common one. You take the drug and it makes you very tired. So, you know, if you can't stay awake all day, then you start taking it. You might try taking it at night, but it's short acting, so by the morning you wouldn't have an effect anymore. So that has been, I think, probably the most problematic of symptoms that might be made better by an extended release. So you're not getting a blast of effect or a very high level of effect for a short period of time. And then the roller coaster of it's going up and down, you would have kind of a smooth or a modulated action of the drug instead of a firing of the gun and waiting for the wave to go down. So it's hopefully that will help with fatigue. Other common side effects are Parkinsonism. The slow motor problems that happen in Parkinson's disease also happen in Huntington's disease, but we don't see it as easily because chorea is there too. So whenever you make chorea better, you make the other motor, you have potential for making the other motor problem of Huntington's worse. Or the kind of motor movement that is measured by finger tapping, we call Parkinsonian side effects. And those are very important because they impair function too. So, but antipsychotics do this as well. So many of the side effects are similar to what happens with antipsychotics when they're used for chorea. Apathy is one of them. You can create also some extra movements sometimes, something called akathisia, particularly when tetrabenazine is used with other drugs. So all of them have, anything we use now for chorea, they have significant side effects. That's hard to tell from the disease process itself. So it's hard for a doctor to recognize. It's hard for a patient or a patient and family to recognize. You know, what's causing this change? You know, is the swallowing worse because we started this drug, or is it worse because the disease is progressing? Sometimes it's hard to tell those two. Nigh impossible sometimes to tell those apart.
Right.
So if we
James
can find...
James just put your link to your article up in the chat room so that people can click on that. It's really good information. What happens when a drug comes off of patent?
It means that another company can make a generic. The cost for prescribing tetrabenazine will go down because more than one company can make it. Just as when we, as Zoloft or Sertraline went generic, and we were able to, more patients were able to afford it. More people were able to afford it because there were generic equivalents. Now, with tetrabenazine, it's unclear if there how many other, with, because we ha- this is an orphan disease, it is unclear how many or if any people, any companies would make the generic form because it's a relatively low market disease. We don't have a lot of people on tetrabenazine, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. So, and unfortunately, I had to mute the phone because my dog was barking. But when a generic comes on the market, or if it comes on the market, then what happens to the brand drug?
Well, the brand drug is still there, and often the brand will bring down the cost of their drug to be nearly equivalent to the generic form. So it's a way of bringing costs down. You know, buying Nitamin or tetrabenazine from Canada is much less expensive than what one would pay for it without insurance here, even though it's the same drug.
Great. Okay, well, how exactly does the ER version of a drug work? It's the way it's formulated. But how does that actually work for the patient?
It works, the effect on dopamine, it depletes dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter that's one that's necessary for controlling coordinated movement, but it's in excess. If one depletes that, then chorea is lessened. So it depletes. It prevents the neurotransmitter from being resorbed into a safe place. So it's gotten rid of. So it depletes. It lowers the level of dopamine in that nerve cell. Now the extended release does the same thing. It's just that the drug stays in the bloodstream longer, is smoother. The way they find this out is they have a person that they or animal that they give the drug to, and then they take blood samples every hour or every half hour, and then they measure the level of that drug in the bloodstream. And with tetrabenazine, you will have a very high level, and then it will come down a bit, and then it will dip low before you get another, and then you take another pill. So you will have blood levels and the effects of those blood levels. So you have too much at various times, so you can maintain an adequate level for a good portion of the following time. When a drug is more slowly metabolized or gotten rid of in the body, then it can stay at a level, same level, longer. So you don't get the roller coaster up and down.
Right. That would be
so
a
you
good
will
thing.
You would right. It's a good thing because you do not you don't have the swings. Let me compare it to taking a blood pressure pill. If you took a pill for your blood pressure and it was very short acting, then you would, and you wanted to have some continued benefit over a period of time, there would be a time when you'd have way too much and then your blood pressure would be too low.
Right.
And then you would have a time when it would be okay, and then it would be back up again before you took another pill. Now, if you have a pill that is longer acting and you get the dosage stabilized after two or three doses, then you have a smooth level. you don't have, you know, so your blood pressure, the effectiveness of it for blood pressure control will be there without it being, without your bottoming out, without your having a very low blood pressure for certain periods of time. So there, is that a decent analogy for you?
Yes. We have a.
Was that?
We have a question or comment from the chat room. And hi, Dave. Dave Hodgson asks, drug patents last for 19 years. If Xenazine is 7 years old, doesn't it have 12 more years of patent protection?
It has only about 4 or 5 more years, I believe. I may be incorrect, but I think it is not that long. I don't think it's a 20-year patent protection that they have. The patent protection starts from the time you file your IND.
Oh, okay.
I believe. You know, I'm not the expert
potentially
on this.
Before...
It starts before the drug is available to a patient.
Okay, right.
How much earlier, I don't know. And, you know, they may know more about patents than I do. So take what I say with a grain of salt. I believe it isn't that much longer that they have patents, but I could be wrong.
Right.
Look it up.
Okay, that'd be great. Dave also comments probably because it's considered an orphan drug.
Well, I will look it up. I don't think it's a 20-year.
Huh. Okay,
I don't think you get 20 years,
but
I have to look. I'm
yeah.
not going to say
Thank you,
wrong,
Dave.
But I'm
Thanks
not
for
sure.
participating. Appreciate your comments and questions, and happy to know you're listening. Thank you for the question. Yeah, so that's interesting. I don't know. Definitely don't know how long that patent is. But
if my computer weren't frozen, I would look it up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Dave, we'll get back with you on this one.
And we'll get it published on your site, whatever's correct.
Oh, good.
Thank
yeah,
you, David.
Very good. Good question. But then having, you know, clinical trials now, having to go through clinical trials, it takes a while for a drug to actually get through that process and then approved by FDA for the market, right?
Yes, and with tetrabenazine, it had to go through two different approvals, as you recall.
Oh.
Two different steps of approval. It was they had to go back and resubmit. So there was it took them longer than if they'd just gotten FDA approval up front.
Oh, wow. Very good.
I don't know whether that had. Okay.
Okay. So.
Well, here I see 20 years. I think David is right.
Okay. Good job, Dave. You need to be on the show, Dave. You can give us some information.
Well, that's patent protection, but for a drug, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I won't look it up right now.
Okay. I think James just put up FDA.gov drugs development approval process. Document, so maybe that'll have that information in it. Thank you. Good stuff.
Well,
okay. Well,
maybe it's 20 years. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you. Thank you very much. So then let's talk about the trial information because there's a lot of information. Of course, we definitely want you to go to HSG, the HuntingtonStudyGroup.org site. But you can also get that information on clinicaltrials.gov, right?
Right.
And hdtrials.org. And we will definitely be putting that information out on our website as well through our Facebook groups and all that good stuff. So the information is going to be readily available. When in doubt, contact HSG because this is an HSG trial, and they will have the most up-to-date information. But is there anything else that you wanted to add to that? Dr. Goodman?
I know that they're having trouble recruiting. It's going slow. Mm-hmm. And that's partly because you're looking for a particular kind of individual, a person that has moderate or moderately severe chorea who is untreated.
Mm-hmm.
So, and someone who has never been on tetrabenazine.
Mm-hmm.
So you eliminate, you know, a bunch of people who might otherwise have wanted to be in the trial, so the criteria limit them. You can't be on citalopram or Celexa or Seroquel. You can't be on any antipsychotic.
Mm-hmm.
You can have been on an antipsychotic up to a month before, but not on one presently.
Okay.
And there are certain drugs that also limit your being able to be in the trial.
Okay, we have two more questions here. This is a comment from, I don't know if I can say her name. Can I say her name? She says, hi, Dr.
Yes.
Goodman. Okay, her name is Laura, and she says, hi, Dr. Goodman. I love listening to you on the show. Thank you for everything you're talking about tonight. You and Melissa really help us out. Look forward to more shows. Thank you, Laura. And Dave Hodgson also writes in the chat room, won't there be two trials? It was my understanding that for those that are on Xenazine, there will be a second trial for those folks. Yes, and that's true. We have
that's
first
right.
HD and ARC-HD. So, yep, you're right,
yeah,
Dave.
ARC study can either be a continuation of people who have been in first, can continue whether they had placebo or not, continue the drug for the following year, or new people who were not in that, people who have been on tetrabenazine before can join ARC, which is on recruiting also.
Yep, they're both recruiting at the same time. Dr. Goodman, do you think there's going to be a problem finding people for first?
I think it will take longer than it might for some other trials because it's a drug that's treating a symptom that we already have treatments for. I think that's one of the reasons. You know, many people who would have fit criteria for this trial have already been on tetrabenazine.
Mm-hmm.
So you have you need ambulatory people who can swallow, who can, who aren't, you know, have no active behavioral problem or depression or history of severe depression, you can't be in this trial.
Right.
So there are, you know, you have a limited pool of people to start with. So anyone who qualifies for this trial via criteria, we need to strongly encourage people to be in this trial. We will never have any better drug than we have now if we don't join these clinical trials or help those that would fit criteria, help them be in the clinical trial, encourage them, let them be aware, you know, help them with transportation, anything that will bring more people that are fit criteria for a trial to it is the only way we're going to get treatments for this generation or the next.
Right,
and we have to keep kind of drilling that home.
I see that you just put up the healthrhinternational.org HSG link. All of our clinical trial radio programs are on that page. So if you have any questions and want to hear the PIs talk or Dr. Goodman or anybody talk about the clinical trials that are actually happening now, please go to that link and listen to whatever trial you want. And then, again, if it's an HSG trial, be sure to contact them directly so that they can then answer your questions, whatever questions that you have about that particular trial. They can, you know, ease your fears, talk to you about what the trial limitations are and that kind of thing. It's a really good way to educate yourself and then ask questions. Mm-hmm.
Another great way to do that and also learn about the center that's closest to you, you know, go to it's on the HSG site on clinicaltrials.gov.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There are links to They tell you who's recruiting, which site is open in your state, and contact information for that, for the person who is recruiting for that clinical trial. So you can talk to someone personally who in turn would meet you. So that is another great way to do it and to make contact with your center. The center that's nearest, that's convenient, most convenient for you to go to. That's an excellent way to get information right near your home.
Right. Well, we're talking about another new project that potentially we could be putting all clinical trials in one place, which would be a really good idea. Michael J. Fox Foundation has piloted that model, which I don't, you know, we don't have the resources that he has, but we could certainly try to do something similar where all trials will be in one location. That's for another day, probably. We've got a lot of stuff happening right now, but I don't know if there's anything else that you wanted to add to this, Dr. Goodman.
I think that an important way of getting people more aware of clinical trials that they will fit, particularly if they are an individual who will fit criteria for a trial, is to join Enroll. Enroll HD, the Observational Trial International Study, then gets you associated with a center who can, with your permission, contact you, because they have your information there, contact you for, you know, and let you know that there's a trial there that you fit.
Right.
And
good point.
That is an excellent way of, that is, I almost think is the best way to learn about a trial in your area is, or in other areas, is to join Enroll. So you're getting yourself registered to be called up for a clinical trial. You're also helping with, you know, with the study of the disease by going once a year, but you're getting yourself on a roster to be called if you're eligible and you want to participate. So that's number one.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. I'm just putting that link into the chat room as well. And you can find out about Enroll HD there. And that particular clinical study, it's a prospective registry study, and it's a global HD cohort, and that's done by CHDI. Very important. And that is another
and you can
study that
be
we
in
need.
Enroll and then be in any other trial at the same time.
Right. That's one of the points. Actually, I wanted to bring Katie on here. Hold on, let me grab her. Katie has had numerous clinical trial experiences with her husband. Hey, Katie, are you with us?
I'm here.
Hi.
Hello.
Do you want to just talk a little bit about your experiences with clinical trials?
Yeah, you know, it's funny that Dr. Goodman just said that, because we've been having talks about that, you know, you can be in an observational trial and then be in a drug trial as well. And we've been talking about the importance of these observational trials. So I'm glad Dr. Goodman brought that up today, because the observational trials are important to help the researchers and clinical trials to come in the future for us. I'm actually a huge, my husband and I, we actually are in Enroll, and we've been involved in four trials, and I'm such a huge advocate for clinical trials, because, you know, we believe that it's the only way we are going to find a potential therapy or cure or treatment for Huntington's disease. The only way we're going to do that is if we enroll in clinical trials. We have to satisfy the FDA. The FDA has to know that it's safe and tolerable and effective. And I've had a lot of talk lately with industry and science and patient advocates coming together, because it really takes us all coming together as a team to bring future therapies for Huntington's to market. So we have to play our part, too, in getting out there and enrolling in the clinical trials we can, so we can help this process accelerate. so we can get therapies quick because we need them.
Katie,
and I think it's important.
I want to thank you for Katie Jackson. She's our VP.
Sorry.
She's our Vice President of Help for HD International. And she and I are going to be working very closely in this clinical trial support platform to help educate and inform our community and work together with industry and science and try to understand their point of view and get them to understand the point of view from the caregiver and the patient and try to have, you know, a closer relationship and a better turnout and trials and retention, too, because that's important.
Right. Even bringing it into the retention level is incredibly important. It doesn't matter if we get these trials enrolled. We have to retain these trials. We have to be a part of them from start to finish. And so, actually, it's really interesting how industry is actually starting to, you know, come. I've had numerous meetings with different people from industry, Melissa and I, and they really are coming and saying, you know, how can we help? What can we do to make these clinical trials more comforting for the patients, make them more, you know, accessible? How can we help make this process easy for the patient and the caregivers, which is really exciting that industry is seeing the importance of it being a team effort to get these therapies to market.
Auschwitz indeed is paying for transportation, gasoline expenses. If you need to stay overnight, they realize that you can be coming from a distance. They will pay for lodging. You'll get one of these little credit cards. You don't have to, you know, submit your bill and then get reimbursed 3 months later. You will have a credit card where you will be reimbursed that day that you come to your visit. Companies are trying very hard to make it more convenient for individuals. Another thing I want to say is that in terms of recruiting for clinical trials, you know, stepping up yourself is important. But if you can help bring someone else to a clinical trial, then we have to go that extra mile because we run out of people that are accessible for these clinical trials who live close enough to be able to come to a nearly once a week visit. As some of these once a week or once every 2 week visits, it becomes harder. So if we can help another person encourage or help in any way that person to be in a trial, it's as important as you being in it yourself. And we have to go that extra mile, getting that other person, a family member somewhere else, or, you know, someone else in your support group. That type of encouragement has to go out in all directions, or we will not, you know, get these clinical trials done in a timely manner.
That's a really good point. I really appreciate that point because, you know, we think about ourselves, you know, first, and then, of course, then we think about that later and go, wait a minute, I should have brought so-and-so, you know. So that's a really good point.
Yeah, I mean,
and
if you're sitting in your support group and, you know, you see someone who might qualify, then you suggest that they, you know, you can encourage. You don't want to make people feel guilty. You don't pressure people. That's not what I'm suggesting. But increasing awareness and encouraging and educating about the importance of it. I know you can go too far with some of those things, but if we don't do outreach and education, personal education, then, you know, with some passion behind it, we're not going to get anywhere.
That is such a good point. Thank you for bringing that up. Definitely. Well, we have some other comments in the chat room. James, did you have any other questions or comments in there that I've missed? Because it's moving fast.
Well, someone had just mentioned about what is Dr. Goodman's view on OCD, and what I did was I went ahead and copied and pasted our link for her algorithms regarding the OCD so that they'll be able to read that. So please, the individual who's asking about that, I'm sorry you didn't give me permission to say your name, but feel free to visit the link in the chat room, and you can download and print out all of Dr. Goodman's documents, and they're awesome.
James, was it a specific question that she can speak of right now?
To make a point that they're not Dr. Goodman's documents. This was the result of an effort of 65 or so EHDN and HSG experts. I was the facilitator. That is very different than saying they're my documents. They're not mine.
Good to point out. Although you did compile them.
Well, I did contribute some work, but they're not my brain power that's in there.
It's the brain power
of the experts. Yes.
Group effort. But it's very good information, nonetheless. It's very good information. Okay.
We're gearing up to do some other symptoms, and we hope we'll be able to do them even better this time. So that's an FYI, I guess.
Okay, great. We do have another comment from Dave Hodgson. Thank you. Dr. Goodman.
Oh, dear. How scary.
Dave says.
Go ahead.
Okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
It's not too scary, I don't think. Okay, here it goes. Dr. Goodman, one person from our support group found that baclofen helps some patients with myoclonus. Bad spelling, he says. we've just started our son on it. Oh, gosh, now I lost it. Hold on. We just started our son on it for his finger movements. Okay. Can you talk about baclofen for that, Dr. Goodman?
Well, there is... I can't talk very much about it.
Okay.
I don't believe that, I think there has not been, let me back up and say there's no evidence base one way or the other. There's been no clinical trial that I'm aware of. There have been case reports or so, but it's limited to that. So there is no evidence base that we can say, yes, it's helpful, or no, it isn't. I think there are anecdotal or reports that it's useful, but in my query of the experts, it is not their opinion that it has been very useful.
Dave,
you take that with a grain of salt. Each person is different. What works for one person is not helpful for the next in Huntington's. I don't know why that is. But, it's because people with Huntington's are so different. So if something is working, you can't say, well, the expert said it didn't work for him. Well, there is no evidence base. That expert can't say that it doesn't work for you. So it's impossible to answer these questions because there is not enough study done to give a good opinion. So you just... It is aggravating. You see me getting worked up here because you can't, as a physician, answer that question. Myoclonus, though, I must say, is usually treated by, usually you utilize a mood stabilizer. Most people do. Baclofen is often used for rigidity in other diseases, like multiple sclerosis.
Mm-hmm.
Or after a stroke or something like that, and there is evidence certainly that it probably has at least a partial benefit in other disorders, but it really has not been studied in Huntington's.
It's funny that you're bringing this up, and Dave, it's funny that you're bringing this up because my younger son, before he passed, he had some leg movement, kind of bopping around with his leg. And our internal medicine doctor prescribed the baclofen for him, and it actually did work for him. So maybe they're starting to try it and see if it's beneficial. But anyway, that's a good point. I have to tell you a funny comment from Dave Hodgson. He says, "I'm not scary, damn it."
I know.
Good one, Dave.
He's a great man and a great big family.
Oh, shoot. good to have some humor along with the serious stuff, right?
Yeah, and we have to admit that we all don't, none of us know all of it. And if we act like we do, then we should teach ourselves a thing or two. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Good. It's good fun though. Okay. Well, listen, I've got some announcements. We're getting close to time to come off the air. Did you have anything else that you wanted to mention though before I do announcements, Dr. Goodman?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, this Saturday, January 11, is our first English-Spanish program at 9 a.m. We're going to have a morning show. Our incredible special guest is Veronica Ruiz Moreno from Mexico City. She's been running marathons around the world since she found out she has Huntington's or is a carrier for Huntington's. And we will also be introducing our amazing Health for HD International Ambassador, Daniel Medina, as our translator. Want to see if Mr. Daniel Medina, are you there, Daniel? Want to say hello to everyone?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, everybody.
Okay.
Hi, everybody.
So anyway, Daniel's going to be on this Saturday with me, and we're going to do this English-Spanish program. It's going to be really exciting. The next Tuesday, January 14, we get to hear back from our dear friend Jimmy Pillard, who's also traveling and lecturing about Huntington's disease. And then next Wednesday, we get to have, this is exciting too, Gene Veritas, a.k.a. Ken Serbin, will be on with a special presentation from his World Stem Cell Summit experience. Then next Thursday, January 16, we have Crest E with Bonnie, another clinical study. Then next Saturday, January 18, we will have another amazing English-Spanish program with Daniel, and our special guest will be Brenda Vega, also from Mexico City. We're gearing up to do bilingual shows now. It's so exciting to have Daniel on for our English-Spanish co-host, and I'm very excited about that. So please spread the news and come back and listen to our episodes. Send them out to your friends and family and colleagues. And we'll go ahead and conclude the show tonight. Thank you, Dr. Goodman, again. We're so happy to have you back with us. Thank you all again for tuning in. And we will talk again on Saturday. We'll talk to you on Saturday. Get the free app, Help for HD. The original mobile connection to education, resources, and information about JHD and HD. Find us on Facebook, Help for HD, or our website, helpforhd-international.org. And y'all have a great night, and we'll talk to you Saturday.